in your coal miner. Let me thank you for your time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around. 251-343-0106 to be in touch with the program. Hit us up there. Also, coming up here in about an hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. So stay right where you are. Joining us now, however, we're very pleased to have our next guest on the line. He hails from the 2nd Congressional District, Congressman Barry Moore, with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. We are doing fine. How you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for coming on. We always appreciate it. Let's kick it off here. Durham appeared before the Judiciary Committee, a committee you sit on earlier this week. I guess a few takeaways. I mean, I thought he did all right. I really wasn't enamored with the Durham probe and just the timeline. It seemed like it took way too long, but he did hold his own against some of the Democrats, and we did find out some startling things about the way that whole 2020 Russiagate episode was treated, and they took some liberties there they probably should have within the Department of Justice. But you were there. You had the front row seat. What were your takeaways?
I think, I think one of the key takeaways is kind of what we suspected. Now we know. And I think, too, when Durham said in his report, and he's a fan of the FBI and the DOJ, he's a career guy over there. So to say that he would come out and say it was sobering, I thought was pretty interesting. And the stuff that we learned between the Clinton camp, the DNC, the FBI, the weaponization of that process and the Steele dossier, it really kind of concluded what we thought the whole time. But I think the takeaway for me, Jeff, if you just step back and look at it, it's twofold. The DNC and Hillary Clinton, they started this narrative about Russian collusion to divert the fact that she had a unauthorized server in her basement. And when they started this Steele dossier, they funded part of it. But then the fact that the FBI offered Christopher Steele $1 million after the DNC paid him to put the thing together, the FBI offered him $1 million to verify, that is remarkable to me. And that's the concern. And I was hoping, I think we did connect the dots there, and we show that the FBI really treated the Clinton camp one way and the Trump camp another way. And that is the concern, whether it be the FISA warrants and the process going forward for the FBI and the DOJ. Those are the things that we suspected, and they have happened.
Well, and I always thought this about the whole Hillary Clinton angle to this, that we got into it, right, that, like, they lost an election that everybody thought it was a shoo-in. It was a layup. They were supposed to win. And she had assembled this very expensive campaign. It was supposed to be the best of the best, the elites of the elites. There was no way they could have lost to Donald Trump. It had to be Russian collusion. And then that sort of stuck for the first several years. I mean, the first few years of Trump's term. And it hung over him. And it just looked to me, Congressman, like they were planting that seed to sow those seeds of doubt over the Trump presidency to kind of slow him down because they didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, and it started the sham impeachment. Remember, the Steele dossier was entered into the congressional record, and now we know that it was all false. And that Charles Dolan, who was a former head of the Democratic National Committee Governors Association, he was the guy the information was being relayed through a Russian spy, Dan Chico, to Christopher Steele, on one arm where the FBI was doing the investigation and the information was being built. On the other side, you had the Clinton camp and the law firms, I can't remember the names, Perkins Coie, whoever, that were sending the money up through the chain. And so the fact, though, to me, that Clapper and the CIA sat down in the White House and they let Obama, the Vice President, Joe Biden, Loretta Lynch, and even at the time, who was the corrupt FBI director? Comey.
Comey,
yeah. They let all those guys know. The CIA let those people know, the leadership of the country at the time, that, oh, by the way, Hillary Clinton's camp has put this thing together. And then Comey didn't even notify the agents who were doing the investigation that, in fact, this came from the Clinton camp. He let the agents go out there and do all this investigating and turn them loose on the Trump campaign when he knew that it was coming from the Clinton campaign. And that, to me, was probably one of the, as our friend Mr. Durham said, one of the most sobering, I think, acknowledgments that we got out of the process is that, in fact, the FBI get information from the agents that were doing the investigation so they could, again, dog Trump for 24 months or 36 months. And then, of course, the Democrats started the impeachment off of this thing, too.
Well, they made the most of it. It just, they really dominated the news. Obviously, you don't have to ask the media to do any favors for something like this. But I think it really, I mean, the voters voted for Donald Trump in 2016 because they wanted something. And it prevented the process from living up to the will of the voters. And I don't think people really think about it like that. But to me, that was always like, there could have been so much more that happened during the Trump's presidency if not for that. Because you had, Congress, this predates you, obviously, but Congress was a little, they were a little reluctant, even though they're under Republicans, a little reluctant to go along with this new president.
Yeah, and, that's the thing. Can you imagine? Strzok said, he would never be president. We got that from him and Lisa Page's text. They were going to stop him. But once he became president, then I think they turned it into a prevent any kind of success mode for the president of the United States from the FBI. And that, to me, like you said, had that not been, could you imagine what that president could have done for this country if he didn't have to fight the DOJ, the media, the Democrats, and even some in his own party all at the same time to accomplish what that man accomplished?
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore of the 2nd Congressional District here on the program. Congressman, I want to ask you about some of the things going on right now. A little friction within the Republican caucus about some of these privilege motions. Congresswoman Boebert, she's got hers to impeach now. The freshman congresswoman from Florida, Luna, got the censure of Adam Schiff through eventually. But what do you make of this? Do you like the way this process is working, the impeachment? Where are you on some of this right now?
Well, I think the American people expect us to hold them accountable after what they've done to President Trump. Certainly, I think that we have to look at impeaching Biden with especially the information that's coming forward with the recent recorded phone calls. And there's just a lot out there that we know now about China. And so I don't have a problem with it. I think that's what we have to do. The American people expect that. And certainly Adam Schiff, the censure resolution, he needed that. I mean, he was the man who led this impeachment that you and I have been talking about, this Russian collusion narrative that we've been talking about that impeded the president from doing his job. And Schiff, knowingly and willingly, he had information because he got some information that the American people and a lot of Congress didn't have access to. And yet he pushed this narrative that Trump colluded with Russia to hold the presidency up, to hold the nation hostage, and to spend millions upon millions of dollars to actually cripple a presidency and the leader of the country. And so the two things that I think we've done this week, whether it's impeaching Biden or working in that direction, and certainly Senator Adam Schiff, the American people expect that. I mean, we do it by the book. We don't go out and try to run around the rules. I think sometimes the left abuses those rules. We try to play by the law. But at the same time, I think the American people expect us to move, and I think you saw that this week.
Well, yeah, and the whole Adam Schiff phenomenon, I mean, we look back at it now, kind of getting back to the whole Russia fiasco, but, I mean, the way the things worked, that Intelligence Committee, they got Devin Nunes out of the picture in a hurry. It was remarkable. And forced him to kind of recuse himself of some silly visit to the White House or something. And you look back at it now, and then it's just from that point forward, time after time, and they had the skiff, and they had all those weird closed-door hearings, and everything that was really just out of bounds, out of protocol for Congress that he did regarding this, it turned out to be nothing there. And I guess maybe it's so far out of mind, out of sight, but when Republicans got control, they had to do something.
Absolutely. And I tell everybody, and we told McCarthy this, man, we were deep in our own territory, Jeff. We could not take a knee as a party. Once we got the majority, we had to move the ball to midfield. And of course, Kevin moved early to kick Schiff off Intel Committee, and then we censured him yesterday. The impeachment of Joe Biden, these investigations now that we have going, and we're going to let Comer and Oversight do their job. And then, of course, Judiciary may have a part to play in it as well on the immigration issue, because that's Lauren's impeachment actually is it kind of focusing on the not enforcing the southern border and allowing this unbelievable migration and drugs into our country. So we'll have an opportunity in a subcommittee on the border and immigration down there, obviously, to start that in judiciary. But yeah, it's just time we hold them accountable. And we can't take a knee. We're going to do it by the book, but we're not going to take our foot off the gas.
Congressman, you mentioned immigration, and I was, I guess, the next person that ought to have some kind of target on him, Alejandro Mayorkas, DHS, and just the border continues to spiral out of control, you know, even more and more and more. When do you, are we, where are we in that process?
You know, I just don't see it being that far away, Jeff. I don't know when we'll actually move to impeach him. I'm on some articles now to do that. But I tell you too, Christopher Wray at the FBI, you know, the FBI assured us after the abuses that we've discovered again and verified this week with the Durham report, now the way that they're operating on this recent arrest of Trump, where they're using the Washington, D.C. field office instead of the Miami field office, and they're not signing a U.S. attorney to that raid on his home. They're not notifying Trump's attorneys. It seems like the FBI tells you, oh, they've fixed the problems and they've corrected the issues, yet they're still abusing power. So even Christopher Wray, I think him, Mayorkas, there's two or three people that we have to start taking a look at and start holding accountable. I'm not saying the FBI down the ranks are bad, because like I said, some of these agents did not even realize what Comey and some of the other crowd knew. They kept that information from those agents to harass the President of the United States. And so it looks like they have not changed their modus operandi. They're just coming after the President. And you remember is, I think, the famous thing that Chuck Schumer said on the interview, they can get you six ways to Sunday. And he was talking about the DOJ and the FBI. And that's what they're trying to do to President Trump. And we've got to hold this crowd accountable. And I don't know what that's going to take. I don't know what that's going to look like, but that's what we got to do.
And talk to us a little bit. I know it's some time away, but, you know, I guess we're building up toward 2024, and you're backing Donald Trump, but getting better numbers in the House, and then obviously getting the Senate. Any discussion about that at this point?
Not a lot. I mean, I think that, yeah, sure, I'm backing Trump, and I think that this recent attack probably helps him in some way, Jeff. But, you know, I think I've told McCarthy, and he's polling higher than any speaker in recent history. That doesn't mean what he's doing is real easy right now, because he has a slim majority. You've seen that. And but I think that we're pulling the House Freedom Caucus, and those of us, because of the tight majority, would pull Kevin more to the consensus of kind of what the country believes, certainly what my district believes and thinks is right for government. And so I think it bodes well for us down the road. We're having these fights behind closed doors, sometimes in public, not necessarily a good idea. But I think that it's good that we're pulling him to the right, and I think that he's doing a great job. And I think that helps the party and certainly helps whoever we have at the top of the ticket.
Well, doesn't it seem like the Freedom Caucus sort of on the ascent to me? You look back at it, I mean, from its founding, and it's always been on the rise, I suppose, but now it's really starting to matter. Like, you know, you really do have to deal with these guys if you want to get certain things done. Now, obviously, the numbers being so tight and the margins sort of give you guys more leverage, but it does seem like it's growing more as well in numbers.
Yeah, I think that and I don't know when that started. I can't say for sure, but I know during the impeachment of Trump, and I think Trump realized that he could lean on people within House Freedom Caucus for leadership. I think that's where Mark Meadows came in. He was former chair of the House Freedom Caucus. And Jim Jordan in the defense of the president. There's been some things that I think have allowed him to kind of rise to the top. And they're the leaders within, I think, the conservative movement here on the Hill. And, you know, I think Trump learned to trust us, and I think that kind of builds that I don't know, that image or whatever you want to call it, that makes it trustworthy. When I go to those meetings up here, there's disagreements behind closed doors, but you know everybody in there believes what they're saying. They're willing to fight for what they believe in. And that we come out united, and I think we, for the most part, like I said, I know for the second congressional district, the House Freedom Caucus, the member there, which happens to be me, represents that district pretty darn well.
Well, you look at it also from this standpoint. I mean, one time or another, I mean, you joined the House Freedom Caucus, and you were, I mean, they were going to, a lot of your colleagues in the Republican caucus, you weren't going to get all the perks and benefits of the fundraising and all that, but you guys have really put together a campaign machine that makes you sustainable, that gets you know, money in coffers, and also, more importantly, I guess, kind of growing the numbers there through either the primary or general election processes. that you're starting to get a little, you're starting to see a little more of the what you need to do to build up your numbers throughout the political process.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the House Freedom Caucus has the House Freedom Fund, and certainly that, I think that's the fundraising arm of that operation. But you have to have the money to do this job to get the message out. But again, I think because of the image, if you will, the integrity within that group at House Freedom Caucus, I just think it helps us, you know, whenever we're out. And when I ran, we get that question, Jeff. I would be in a debate with the six other candidates, and there would be people in the audience saying, will you raise your hand that you're going to join the House Freedom Caucus? And I don't know that anybody in the room but me would. But I always thought that that was where I belonged. That was where I felt that my convictions on policy were. And it's been nothing but a good thing for me. And again, when you got guys like Jim Jordan taking you under their wing and the Mark Meadows of the world and the Warren Davidsons of the world, Dan Bishops, those guys that just take you under the wing and they help you through this thing, man, that's friends you can trust and you need to rely on.
Carson, we're going to leave it there, but you're always very kind to make time for us on this show, and we will talk again soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Have a great weekend.
Carson Barry Moore, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. And no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.